Well, I certainly agree with Ray on his last point, that Iran is a problem for the foreseeable future. And I would just ask the question of what's our best way of dealing with that problem. And in particular, I want to concentrate my remarks, and start with my remarks, talking about the nuclear problem and how best to approach that, because I think that is really the core problem in U.S.-Iranian relations at the moment. And to answer the question about how should we best proceed on the nuclear issue with Iran, I want to ask three basic questions. The first is the nuclear problem with Iran fundamentally a bilateral U.S.-Iranian issue, or is it fundamentally a issue about the global nonproliferation system and Iran's treaty commitments? And I would suggest that it's not surprising that we've had a series of unanimous UN Security Council resolutions about this issue, and that we have seen Russia and China being prepared to make very substantial changes in their initial policy stance towards Iran to get much firmer about the matter, because they are very concerned about the issue of the nonproliferation on a global basis. And it's not an accidental that in most of the major capitals around the world, including Washington, most of those who have been dealing with this matter have been people whose background is on proliferation and whose concern is about proliferation and not about the Middle East. It's because the fundamental problem represented by Iran's nuclear program is the prospect that the world will have not one new nuclear power, but many, that we will see a decay of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which has been the heart and core of our efforts over the last 40 years to reduce the threat of nuclear war. And precisely because this is a global issue, and this is an issue which concerns Iran's commitments to international treaties, this is not a matter which fundamentally should be dealt with on a bilateral basis between the United States and Iran. If this issue is reduced to a bilateral American-Iranian matter, there's going to be many around the world, many governments around the world, who will start out being sympathetic to the Iranian position and suspicious of America's interests and positions. It is much better for the world and much better for American interests that this nuclear issue be approached as a matter of global concern and not something fundamentally to be dealt with in bilateral U.S.-Iranian negotiations. And Iran understands this full well, and therefore has devoted extraordinary efforts to trying to suggest that, in fact, the nuclear matter is just one of the latest excuses that the Americans raise in their hostility to the Islamic Republic, and this can be resolved through bilateral negotiations between Iran and the United States, and Europe, Russia, and China don't need to concern themselves about it. They're wrong. We should not play into that. Second question. Is the Bush administration the most respected actor on the international scale for its judgment about how to proceed on matters of weapons of mass destruction in the Middle East? Does the Bush administration have a reputation for accuracy and acumen about how to deal with these matters, and is therefore going to be the trusted interlocutor for the international community on dealing with these affairs? I happen to be active in a very optimistic group called the DC Republicans. And so I wish that I could tell you that the answer to those questions was yes, but it's not. And we all know that full well. And on that basis, I would just suggest that having somebody else, i.e. the Europeans, take a leading role on this serves U.S. interests. It is to the advantage of the United States, indeed it is the advantage of the Bush administration, that the leadership role on this matter be taken by somebody else. It would not be easy to put together unanimous Security Council resolutions if the Bush administration were seen as the one that was leading the charge in this matter. It is much easier to have France, Germany and Britain being the spearhead and the United States being behind the point of that spearhead. Given the state of U.S.-Russian relations, given the rhetoric coming out of Mr. Putin, does anyone think that it'd be easier to reach agreement at the Security Council if this were seen as an American project rather than as a European project? I just don't think so. And so therefore, were the United States to take leadership on this issue and to take over these negotiations, I don't think that would serve U.S. interests. I don't think that it would be more likely to result. Look, I don't even think the American public believes George Bush as much as they believe the French and the Germans. Then my last question is, are the neoconservatives right that only through active American leadership can important questions in international affairs be resolved? Or is there, in fact, scope for multilateral processes in which other powers are not simply informed but consulted and at times lead? Now, I'm certainly somebody who shares an awful lot of the neoconservatives' goals about what the world should look like. But I've never been too enthusiastic about the approach which says that the United States must take the leadership. For failing U.S. leadership, nothing is going to happen. And it is certainly true that that was the case in the most unfortunate developments in the former Yugoslavia, where Europe stepped forward to say that it was going to solve the problem, and the result was genocide, as we saw at Srebrenica. And eventually the Americans had to come in, and that fed the attitude that we are the indispensable superpower. In the absence of American leadership, nothing will happen. I don't think that was good for Europe. I don't think that was good for the world. I don't think that was good for the United States. It gave us a swelled ego. And I think it would be much better for U.S. interests, and certainly much better for the world and for Europe, if indeed Europe could show leadership on important security matter, and the transatlantic alliance could, on this rare occasion, involve European leadership with the Americans in the supporting role. And that is what we've had on the Iran matter now for some, coming on, 4 years. It was remarkable that in August 2003, the heads of government of France, Germany, and Britain wrote to the Iranians and say, we don't care if the NPT treaty is silent on this matter because of your past behavior, you can't have enrichment. That's it. Forget it. No enrichment. They have not budged from that position. This has been 4 years. They have not budged. We have been told repeatedly that they're going to move, they're going to cave, they're not going to last. They haven't. They have not changed their position. This has shocked many people. I think some of the people in this room is shocked. Certainly many of my colleagues it is shocked. But that, after 4 years where they haven't budged on this matter, they're showing a pretty impressive, tough stand. And if the United States were then to announce that, oh, we're going to take over these negotiations and cut a deal with the Iranians, there might be some people in Paris, Bonn, and Paris, Berlin, and London who feel slightly undercut by this, and I think they would have reason to do it. So I would suggest that it is extraordinarily important that the Iran nuclear issue remain a multilateral issue, and that it remain a European-led negotiation in which the Americans are in a supporting role. And since that is the heart and core of the issues, the disputes between the United States and Iran, it is unrealistic to think that any kind of a grand bargain can be done with the Iranians on a bilateral basis. The fundamental issue here is a multilateral issue and should be approached that way. But let me say some words about non-nuclear matters, because clearly the nuclear issue is not the only question on the U.S.-Iranian agenda. And there are other questions that perhaps could be approached by the two sides bilaterally to discuss. Well and good. There, let me ask a couple of questions about what are the prospects for such bilateral negotiations of the other issues. The first question, have the two sides tried negotiating, and if so, what were the results? Well, as Ray pointed out, the United States has been interested in negotiating for many years. And as he noted, we have a lot of experience at it. I find it quite amusing when press reports say that this meeting is the first bilateral U.S.-Iranian meeting and when there have been so many. Indeed, it's worth reminding you about the first public bilateral meeting between senior officials of the Islamic Republic of Iran and the United States, when the president's national security advisor met with the Iranian foreign minister and prime minister. In 1979, Mr. Brzezinski met in Algiers. The results were dramatic. 3 days later, students seized the embassy in Iran, precisely citing that meeting as the reason why they did it, because of their fear of plotting to undermine the Islamic Republic from within. Now, Mr. Brzezinski has gone on to advocate for 28 years that we repeat this wonderful experience again and again and again. Perhaps times have changed. But having tried an approach at the official, open, public level, and it didn't work, we said, all right, we'll do it secret. And indeed we did. We sent another national security advisor to Tehran to hold secret negotiations. I don't think that Mr. McFarland's visit in what was well known as the Iran-Contra affair was a high point of American diplomacy. So having tried public and having tried secret, we then tried, let's do it multilaterally. And we met with the Iranians, indeed, on many occasions in multilateral sessions, with mixed results. Mixed results. I'm not as enthusiastic as some about what happened at the high point, which is the Bonn conference about the future of Afghanistan after the overthrow of the Taliban. But there were some positive moments in these processes. They were tough. They were difficult. You may recall there were times when the Secretary General of the United Nations arranged meetings at the level of foreign ministers of the 6+2 group about Afghanistan, and at the last minute the Iranians wouldn't show up, stay out of the room. It was hard, but they were not fiascos like the other two. But I would just suggest that there is a long history here of negotiations between the two sides. And the best that's been achieved has been modest results and modest progress. And so let's be honest that that is what we are likely to do best. And by the way, that's likely to be the best that we're likely to achieve. And by the way, I would read that history as suggesting that the Iranians had it right about how to do this. When, in response to the suggestion of Madeleine Albright, tried to lay out a roadmap for normalization, her counterpart, the Iranian foreign minister, Harazi at the time, came back and said, no, instead, let us engage in multinational organizations in which we are both members on issues of common concern. I think that's what's worked best. I think it's the best way to go. I think we see this with regard to Iraq. It's easier for the United States and Iran to engage at a multilateral meeting about Iraq, and at that point then to arrange a trilateral session, which no, it was not a bilateral U.S.-Iranian meeting. It was extraordinarily important for the dynamics of that meeting, for the very fact that it happened and for how it took place, that the Iraqis were present in the room. First off, it would have been really a good way to annoy the Iraqi government for the Iranians and the Americans to meet to discuss the future of their country without them there, since we both say we're friends with the Iraqis. And their presence in the room was very helpful because both sides are trying to show the Iraqis that they're being, in fact, reasonable. So that prevents us from getting into open shouting matches. So I think the Iranians had it right about how to do this, which is to say engage in multilateral settings. Anyway, that's one set of questions. Have we tried negotiations? And the answer is yes, and not gotten very far. And the other very important question is, can the United States allay Iranian concerns that the U.S. agenda is fundamentally regime change, and that therefore all of these negotiations are, as Khamenei puts it, the lamb negotiating with the wolf, and that even if Iran were to reach agreement with the United States on one important set of issues like Hezbollah, that the Americans would just raise another set of issues because their real agenda is regime change. Well, we at the Washington Institute issued a very interesting and important piece a couple weeks ago by our visiting fellow Mehdi Khalaji. It goes through and explains Khomeini's vision, what regime change means, and describes in Khomeini's decade-long fixation on what he calls, what his concern is, about the Velvet Revolution. That's a phrase that was originally used in 1989 to describe the overthrow of the Czechoslovak government. And you may recall what a dramatic surprise that was to all of us and how much it occurred because of support from the West, especially the United States, for dissident civil society organizations through broadcasting, and through our support for human rights in these countries. And so when Czech President Havel organized that session a couple weeks ago in Prague and explained the importance of RFERL and U.S. support for NGOs in the overthrow of communism throughout the Eastern Bloc, Khomeini would entirely agree and say, that's exactly their agenda for our region. He's been saying that for a decade. And furthermore, the experiences in the Ukraine, Georgia, and Kyrgyzstan, three countries very close to Iran, in the last 2 years where the same thing happened, and it's one of the reasons why the fixation on George Soros. Catching up my reading my newspapers this morning, and there was a really great article in Kahan 2 days ago about how it's Soros working with the banks, which is responsible for the housing crisis in Tehran, right? These people really do believe these kind of conspiracy theories, and they really do think that our support for Voice of America and Radio Farda and private Americans like George Soros' support for the Open Society Initiative is all part of a carefully orchestrated plot to bring down the Islamic Republic. They're not going to change their view on that. And we're not going to stop issuing those reports that Ray regards as kind of ridiculous. They have broad bipartisan support. In fact, typically, as we saw with the human trafficking report issued yesterday, Congress gets up and complains that there isn't more effort behind these things than that we don't do more of this and we aren't tougher about this with our allies. Look, okay, if we're going to beat up on our friends about these matters, we're certainly not going to keep our mouths shut about the Iranians. Or else people like Ray will stand up here and quite correctly castigate the Secretary of State for keeping her mouth shut about the detention of Iranian Americans. I completely agree with him. We shouldn't do that kind of thing. So look, what I'm describing is a situation in which we are going to continue with activities which is going to be read by the Iranian political elite as aimed at regime change. And there is no prospect that that's going to change, either on our side or on their side. So their fixation on how what we are really about is regime change isn't going to go away. Now, some people blame that on a particular allocation that the Bush administration made of this amount of money or that amount of money or this statement or that statement. It doesn't matter how many times John Bolton got up there in the last few months that he was at the United Nations and said that U.S. policy is not regime change, it's change in regime behavior. The Iranians' political elite isn't going to believe it because their conception of how this regime change strategy is working is that it's based on activities which the United States is going to keep on doing. We are not going to shut down Voice of America. Ain't going to happen, folks. And on that basis, I have to tell you that this fundamental problem in having better negotiations and better engagement with the Iranians is going to be a feature of this regime. This regime is so extraordinarily nervous about its position with its own people that it thinks that a 67-year-old grandmother is going to bring down the regime. That's nuts. But that's their attitude. You look and look at their behavior about a rather kooky small little group which has no support in Iran, the Mujahideen-e-Khalq, And they go ballistic about it. They go ballistic about all kinds of criticism of them, because they are fundamentally aware that they do not have the support of the Iranian people. And they are fundamentally aware that a revolution can blow up out of nowhere and overthrow what appears to be a solid regime. They experienced it, and they're worried it'll happen to them. So basically, I'm saying it would be inappropriate to negotiate about the nuclear matter on a bilateral basis with Iran, and it would be unduly optimistic to anticipate that we are likely to have particularly good negotiations with the Iranians about other matters. So, yes, make the efforts, but have modest expectations.